Hey, so today we want to talk about something that has become much more clear to me after looking at the last 6 months of the macroeconomic environment and really looking at the study of the bond market and how typically the bond market has to price in risk much better and much faster than other markets. And so after studying the bond market, I wanted to take a look at the degradation of yield, meaning that the payoff that bonds typically have associated with the underlying debt as a reward for the investor, so that if you invest $100,000 and you have a 10% coupon or a 10% yield, you would be receiving about $10,000 a year in income on that loan of $100,000. So it's basically a concept that, you know, the yield is the percentage of interest rate on the underlying bond. And so after studying this, I kind of fly back in time 40 years to the 1980s. In fact, 1980-81 was a very, very difficult time in America and the rest of the world. There's a very, very high inflation going on. And it's up to Ronnie Reagan and Paul Volcker and a few others to really come up with a way to break the back of inflation. So if you study a little bit of history at this point, you'll know that they were facing astronomical levels of inflation, whereby year after year, the number was really being printed somewhere between 12 and 15% inflation. But realistically, that might have even been a higher number due to the desire of government agencies to maybe underreport inflation. So realistically on the street, it could have been as high as 20-25%, but the real official number was coming in right around 12-15%. So these people started to issue bonds and raise interest rates at astronomical levels of anywhere between 15-18%. In fact, the highest that was ever recorded was a 21% interest rate. So imagine that, the cost of capital to borrow capital in order to buy a home through a mortgage or buy a car or take out a business loan is somewhere between 15 and 21% in the early 80s. This really puts a burden on anyone looking for credit. That credit has to be used in a way that generates a higher return. So if you are a business owner and you are looking at taking out a loan at 15 to 20%, then you need to be sure that you could generate an alpha, a gain above that number that makes sense for you to take out the loan. And so you need to be looking at generating at least 30, 40, 50% in productivity over that loan so that you can not only pay your debt service back of 15 to 20%, but also keep a profit and make the risk of taking the loan worthwhile. Hopefully that makes sense up until now. And so in 1981, we have a peak in inflation, whereby after about a year, year and a half of being in office, Ronald Reagan okays this and Paul Volcker goes to work and effectively rises inflation, the yield on some of these bonds to match inflation. So in about 18 months later, the experiment starts to work and the economy starts to right itself. And now we have the introduction of credit. So in the 1980s, Margaret Thatcher in the UK, Ronald Reagan in the US basically undergo an idea that if they introduce credit and credit cards into the system, Americans will take up this credit and use it to buy their way into a stronger consumer base so that it will crank and just fire up the economies in both the UK and the US. So if you're staying with this idea, not only have they killed inflation, meaning that the cost of things year over year is going down, and so the rate of that banana in terms of it be going up 15, 20% a year is now coming down to normal levels of 5, 10%, maybe 3, 5%. And on top of that, you're giving Americans the ability to buy things with credit. You are now starting to really crank up and add gasoline to the fire that is the U.S. economy. And you're starting to see that the U.S. economy starts taking off in 1984, 85, 86, 87, and really just makes a real strong run in the 1980s. And so subsequently, that bond yield that was started in 1981 at around 15% starts to come down and starts to run through 12%, 11%, and all the way into the late 80s. Starts bringing down towards 10%. Now, running through the 90s, you see that immediately those bond yields were brought down to 8%, 7%. Whereas if you go through the 90s, you'll see that they stayed somewhere between 8 and 5% in 2000. They were brought down, and immediately when the tech bubble popped in 2001, they were brought down considerably to make money available for Americans. to purchase assets like homes. So in order to get the economy going back again in 2001, 2002, the US government decided to drop interest rates and make money accessible and make it cheap to jumpstart the economy once again. But now we weren't operating at 15% in terms of inflation. We were operating at maybe 2 or 3%. And so the interest rate was only 2 or 3%. And so if you play this out through the 2000s, all of that cheap money fueled the housing boom that ended quite badly in 2008, 2009. And the Fed again decided to lower rates from anywhere between 4.5%, 5% down to about the 1% level. It never fully recovered after that. In fact, in 2010, the rate or the yield on most bonds was anywhere between 2 and 3%. And so as we worked our way through the 2010s, at the end of 2018, 2019, we saw that the Fed never felt comfortable raising the rate of the bond yields to a level of 4, 5, 6, 7, 8%. They just weren't able to. The economy was addicted to cheap money. The economy was addicted to the availability of credit at very low rates. And that anytime they tried to raise the rates, a certain phenomenon called the taper tantrums would happen, and it scared the hell out of the Fed. So the Federal Reserve went into 2020 with the coronavirus at only about 1.5% in terms of its interest rate, meaning that there was no room in order to put out the fire and drop rates so that you would be able to do that like you did in 2008 and 2001 and in certain other times, like in 1981 when you were trying to defeat inflation. So there was no more room, there was no more extinguisher left in the fire extinguisher at this point. In comes the coronavirus in March of 2020, and immediately the Fed jumps on the gun and makes two emergency rate cuts to bring our effective rate down to 0.25%. Now the problem with this is, now that I've gone through 7 minutes of explaining the history really quickly, is that there is no yield left for the baby boomer to latch onto. So as most baby boomers retire, the quote unquote Wall Street slogan is to own your age in terms of percentage in bonds, because it is a more secure investment that yields investment income instead of capital gains like you would be receiving by having Facebook stock or Google stock. You receive a check. But the problem is that at the current rates of only 0.25%, if you invest $100,000 in a bond, you're only going to be receiving $250 a year. So obviously for an American, that is not an attractive investment. And this brings me to the point that we are currently at today, which is that bond yields, aka the interest rate that the Federal Reserve has dictated for the United States, along with the Treasury, is so low that there is no way for the average American to receive income from all of their nest egg built up over the years of saving up in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. Because if you look at it realistically, and you say the average Joe has $1 million saved up in their 401k, which they don't, but let's just assume that that's the reality. If that $1 million were to translate 100% into bonds, they would only be receiving $2,500 a year. Now, what person in the United States could even reasonably start to think of trying to survive on $2,500 a year? It's impossible. And so the constraint that we're looking at here is that the bond market has reached such low levels of yield because the Federal Reserve has kept interest rates artificially low so far, that we are going to see millions and millions and millions and millions of baby boomers finish their workload up in their mid-60s without a place to be able to park their money to receive investment income into the twilight years. And so what this is going to do is going to face the baby boomers with a very difficult question, and that is, after you've saved up $1 million on average in your 401k and in your retirement savings, where do you park this money so that you could safely and securely draw income out of? It's not going to be in stocks, because stocks don't really produce an income. And if they do, it's a very low yield. And they have a lot of volatility, so that your portfolio might one day be at $1 million and within a month or two be only worth $850,000. So you don't want that volatility as a way of risking your entire nest egg. And so the reason that bonds serve a purpose is because a bond has a quote-unquote risk-free return because it is held by the U.S. government or another large sovereign nation that can afford to hold on to that risk and guarantee that not only your safe capital will be held, you know, safely, but that you'll also receive that payday at the end of the day. And so we have this situation right now where the baby boomers that are about to retire are facing this dilemma. And it's a very scary dilemma because I really do believe that the only safe question for them, the only safe answer to the question is to go in cash and possibly wait out any market storms. Because if they were to have that $1 million in the stock market and we'd see a correction of 20 or 30%, imagine being at the end of your life cycle in terms of employment, knowing that the nest egg that you have has to last you for 20, 30 years, and that with rising health costs, you need to watch that nest egg. The only possible inevitability is that stocks get a withdrawal of baby boomer capital, and because they don't have a place to park it in bonds that will actually yield an income, they will more than likely stay in cash. And that causes a massive deflationary shock to the system that depends on consumers spending money. And because the majority of these baby boomers have not only retired in the last 3 or 4 years, but also in the next 2 to 3 years, we probably will have a huge deflationary super cycle coming through the system. And because they are not able to invest their capital in the bond markets, we may have one other solution for them. And that solution is a rocket ship called cryptocurrency. Now, to most older folks, cryptocurrency is the equivalent of nuclear fuel in their garage. But ultimately, a lot of them are going to see the explosion in the cryptocurrency market and will more than likely be forced to take part of their savings and invest it in crypto, because that is the only alternative that makes sense in this entire paradigm where equities are overvalued, there are no interest rate plays that are available for yield or interest income or bond income, right? Income that you receive by investing in bonds. And so because of these constraints in the system, it's either going to be cash that you have to frugally save in the bank and burn through for the next 30 to 40 years, or you're going to be taking part in the cryptocurrency fuel with very small amounts of your capital. So for someone like Joe, who's got $1 million saved up, he's obviously not going to buy $1 million worth of Bitcoin, but he might be interested in saying, hey, what if I did park $5,000 or $10,000 into this thing called Bitcoin and it does take off for me? Maybe this could improve my overall portfolio. If this thing goes to zero, then, you know, we might not have that much of an impact to the portfolio. I might lose the 1%, but given the upside that's available in this, it might be worth taking the risk. Whereas if you're buying Facebook stock at $400, it might not make sense because the upside story is not there, but the downside and the volatility in the stock market is. And so there's these interesting dynamics that are taking place right now with the current reality that is that bond yields are literally at zero almost. Stock market's completely topped out. We have baby boomers retiring, and we have this only available option, which is the rocket ship sitting in the platform waiting to get fueled up and turned on, and that is cryptocurrency. And if we can just get the baby boomer audience to take a look at taking a small position, a very tiny position that could pay off in spades, we could see some very strong capital flows into the space that could benefit all those people who are looking for an either asymmetrical return or some nice income derived from an appreciating asset class. These are just some thoughts here that I wanted to share anonymously on the internet in my thought repository. Hopefully this wasn't a little too much, coming a little too fast for you, but I wanted to keep it in within 15 minutes. So these are my thoughts for August 4th of 2020. Hope you enjoyed it. And if you just found this randomly, I post from time to time. It's nothing special. It's nothing official. It's just a place for me to post for posterity, for the timestamp, and then obviously for down the future when I want to review what I was thinking about during the pandemic. I can look back and take a peek at what my brain was thinking August 4th of 2020. Signing off from New Zealand. I'll catch you on the next one. See ya!